Welcome to Famous Monsters Podcast. We're here to talk horror, sci-fi, fantasy. You may notice that we're not Georgian Company.
We are not.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Matt. And we are the Rocketeers. We have our own podcast called The Launchpad Podcast. We have been friends with the Famous Monsters guys for years now, right? We did a TV show.
Yep.
Aaron and I did a TV show where we interviewed Phil. We have our own podcast now where we just met up with Phil again this past Comic-Con at San Diego. And we were lucky enough to sit down with him for 45 minutes and just chew the fat about monsters.
Yeah. We had such a good time talking to them. They invited us to guest host their podcast. So here we are.
We're pretty excited. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Beyond excited.
I mean, we're a little honored to be asked. Aaron
Absolutely.
And I are both very, very big monster and horror fans in general. And of course, Famous Monsters is our bread and butter. Like, we know that from way back.
Classic. Well, today, Famous Monsters Podcast is brought to you by...
They're coming to get you, Barbara. And they'll get you, too. At the Hall of the Dead, a George A. Romero tribute. Only at the Famous Monsters Halloween Convention this October 27th through the 29th. At the San Jose Convention Center. Experience a Rocky Horror live performance. Meet all your favorite celebrities and stick around for the late night after parties. There's even a free trick-or-treat trail for the kids. Get your tickets today.
So if you look at your calendar right now, you might see something a little spooky.
Oh no, what is it?
It is Friday the 13th.
Oh no.
Now, we're very excited to be here guest hosting on the Famous Monsters podcast. And when they asked us to start off by doing the Friday the 13th episode, we were psyched. Because as you know, Friday the 13th has a huge, huge meaning to our culture, right? In pop culture, it's a big thing. And if you say Friday the 13th, it immediately evokes a feeling. It immediately evokes a bunch of images in your mind. And of course, I'm talking about Mr. Rogers. That's right. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Go on.
Okay. Mr. Rogers had a show for years and years.
I remember the hood.
In his hood, there was another hood called the Neighborhood of Make-Believe.
Oh, yeah. King Friday was the jam.
Do you know about King Friday?
No.
King Friday's full name was Friday the 13th.
What?
That's right. King Friday from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He was really Friday the 13th. He was born on Friday the 13th.
What?
Yes! So Mr. Rogers, in all of his wisdom, and I am a huge fan of Mr. Rogers, he thought to try to take that day back from all the ominous and notorious things that people associate with it.
By associating it with a creepy puppet?
The kids didn't know it was creepy.
Okay.
But yeah, man, so that was King Friday the 13th, and he was ruler of the Neighborhood of Make-Believe. And used to shoot the show live.
Right.
So every Friday the 13th, they would have a birthday celebration where the people of the Neighborhood of Make-Believe celebrated Friday the 13th's birthday, and also any children viewers who are watching, and it was their birthday. So it was kind of like Mr. Rogers' way to kind of take back that day and make it not scary.
But Remy, we're not here to talk about Fred Rogers, are we?
Well, who did you want to talk about? Dude, I did all this research on King Friday and Mr. Rogers. Why? Is there something more prominent in the pop culture eye?
There's a little film franchise that has been so prolific. It's one of the most prolific film franchises in horror.
Go on.
Today we're talking about the Friday the 13th film franchise. That's right, the man in the hockey mask, sometimes, and a sack, and not even a hockey. We'll get to it. Today we're talking about 12 films, 2 video games, a television show. Remy, we got to pack a ton into this episode.
And really, we're filling some really big shoes because this is our first episode guest hosting for Famous Monsters, and they told us to try to keep it within a certain time limit. So we really have to, like, let's set a timer.
Yeah, let's do it.
For each movie. So what do you think we should do? Like 3 minutes, 4 minutes?
4 minutes.
4 minutes per film?
Yeah.
All right, Rumi's actually taking out his phone. He's setting a timer for 4 minutes. All right,
okay.
So all right, let's do this. So Friday the 13th. I know you guys don't know me, but I lied. I know a lot about Friday the 13th, the film franchise. I also know a lot about Fred Rogers and Friday the 13th, the King.
Before we dive into these films, do you want to give a little history on Friday the 13th, the day?
Yeah, let's do that. So if you were to do research, as Aaron and I, oh, and I feel like we should say this. Aaron and I used to be roommates for a number of years.
We used to be roommates, yeah.
So we haven't lived together in over 10 years. But we still both call each other roomie. We'll try not to, but just if you hear us call each other roomie, we're referring to each other. Roomie and I did a bunch of research on Friday the 13th, and there's a lot of different reasons that people speculate that Friday the 13th is an unlucky day, but there's no one reason. There's no one event or anything.
Nope.
There's a lot of religious stuff. One thing is that I found specifically on October 13th of 1307, they think that that was one of the reasons that that Friday the 13th is an unlucky day. The Pope of the Roman Catholic Church sentenced a military order known as the Knights Templar to death and ordered crucifixion and torture death of its leader. And it was that day.
Is that like Jedi Order 66, but on Knights Templar?
I guess so. Do you think the Pope used the hologram? I don't think we should do this for our first episode with them. A lot of calendars use Friday as the sixth day of the week, starting on a Sunday. Friday's the sixth day. And in many cultures, six is just as unlucky a number as 13. Like we in modern American culture, 13 is very very unlucky number, or at least it supposedly is. But there's all different reasons back. Like some of this stuff goes back to like the days that people were ejected from the Garden of Eden, the Great Flood.
Yeah.
The date that Jesus was crucified.
Died on a Friday.
Yep. And then the 13th is also, a lot of people say it has something to do with the Last Supper and how many people attended and stuff like that. So really, it seems like a lot of religious reasons. And it also seems like it's not one thing. It's not one day or one reason why these days and numbers mean stuff.
It's just one of those things that stuck around, and some people said, hey, that's a scary, unlucky day. Let's make a creepy movie about it and not explain that date at all.
Well, if you watch, let's get into it. So the first movie up in that franchise.
All right, I'm starting the timer. You ready for this?
Oh, yeah,
here we go.
The timer. Okay.
Here we go. Boom. All right, Friday the 13th. The first one came out in 1980. It's directed by Sean Cunningham. You know who his assistant editor was?
Who?
A little-known Wes Craven.
No, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty interesting. According to some of the information that we found, it looks like Sean Cunningham had done a bunch of movies and stuff in the past. He put a full-page ad in Variety on the weekend of July 4th, 1979. It was just the title, Friday the 13th, mm-hmm. smashing through the glass like in the credit sequence. And just based on that alone, he got offers for $500,000. It was from people who have invested in his movies previously. But just from that one full-page ad, he got $500,000 budget. Boom.
Wow.
It's pretty
That's pretty cool.
Couldn't do that today.
Yeah, you couldn't at all. couldn't take out like a Facebook ad, nothing like that. Oh my gosh. So this movie's great. I think it's such a classic. It's totally hidden who the killer is for most of the movie.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon's in it.
Kevin Bacon is in it until he meets his demise.
One of the most iconic kills in slasher history. He gets an arrow pushed through his neck from underneath the bed. It's super gnarly. It's been often replicated, even in this very
That's
franchise.
Right, I revisited a couple times.
Yeah. And then at the end you find out it's not Jason at all. It's his mother.
And his mother was played by an actress who'd done a lot of really wholesome family television. She was a known television mom. So for her to be this camp counselor killer was actually pretty gnarly at the time.
Well, and then even after that reveal and she gets her head cut off, spoiler alert. Sorry, this whole thing's going to be filled with spoilers.
If you haven't seen this movie yet, come on.
Come on. So she gets her head cut off, and then the main heroine, she's in a boat, in a canoe, in the middle of the lake, just like taking a breather, like, oh, finally, I made it. And then the big twist is a young, like, zombie Jason jumps out of the water and grabs her. But then in a double twist, she wakes up and is like, what happened? And nobody knows. She's crazy.
Where's the boy?
Yeah, everybody just
the
thinks she's...
The boy Jason!
Yeah, if you're not familiar, the whole movie is built on the premise that this young kid drowned, and this woman, at the end of the movie, found this woman went crazy because of it and killed everybody. But now if there's that movie leaves the seed that possibly Jason is still alive.
Yeah.
If you don't remember, Jason's birthday coincides with King Friday the 13th birthday. Jason's mom reveals in this movie that Jason's birthday is Friday the 13th. They should do a mashup movie where it's revealed that Jason is King Friday the 13th.
All right, Daniel Tiger.
it's funny though, when you watch the whole movie, and I actually watched this specific entry last night, Friday the 13th is mentioned one time.
Yeah.
A police officer looks out his car and goes, it's a full moon. and Friday the 13th. Yeah. And that's it.
None of these movies really have anything to do with the mythos of Friday the 13th. It's just an unlucky
that
day
was it. Yeah,
to be a camp counselor.
That was definitely it.
All right, we hit pause. We've got 43 seconds left. That means that we can add time on to a later movie.
we have 43 seconds
to
spare.
So moving on to the second film, in between movies, what was going on? It was a huge hit.
It was a giant hit. And, you know, it was funny because I read that it was a big cash grab. They knew that they were trying to copy Halloween. I don't necessarily see it as a copy, except that it's a slasher movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like Halloween is probably a tighter slasher movie, but it did great. It was I don't know if it was critically acclaimed, but it made a lot of money. It was a box office hit, and it got big enough that the star, the heroine, the female heroine, the spoiler alert survivor, Alice King, she actually got a real life stalker.
No.
Yeah, stalking her like crazy, and eventually wormed his way into her actual personal life, and she became friends with him, didn't know he was a stalker, until he put a gun to her head, and she eventually was able to like talk him down and get out of there. But that, I mean, that's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, that's so really gnarly.
But she evaded a stalker, but then got killed by an ice pick in the second one.
All right, I'm putting 4 minutes on the timer. We're hitting start. Friday the 13th, part two.
Part two opens right after part one, pretty much. I mean, it's you see her. She's in, it's Alice King, the same girl from the first one, and she's walking on her apartment having an impromptu, because there was no script at the time, an impromptu conversation on the phone with her mom, and Jason comes all the way from Camp Crystal Lake and kills her with an ice pick. it was pretty awesome. This one is different because the mother is now beheaded.
Yeah.
And in this one, Jason is the killer. And it is not, I guess it's still, there's a chance that it's not Jason, but it's a man. We see it's a man in overalls. And he's not wearing his most iconic face wear yet. What does he have on in this one, Rooms?
He's got like a pillowcase tied to his head. He
makes it look good, though. He wears it well.
Sure. He looks like somebody who doesn't know how to make a ghost costume, right?
A Peanuts reject.
This movie is so weird because it's Jason Voorhees getting revenge for his dead mother, who was getting revenge for her dead son, who now isn't dead. This movie immediately is like, hey, forget all that other stuff about that, you know, him being dead. Forget that. Just like, let's just.
I wish my mom would get revenge for me, and then I would get revenge for her, because right now I would not revenge my mom's death. I'm just going to say it right now. This is really cool. This movie as a franchise, get its momentum here. It starts to really understand what it is doing and get into its own. It's own racing track, you know what I mean? It knows what it's going to do from now on. There's a lot of real cool kills. I love, there's a guy named Mark in a wheelchair.
Yep.
He gets killed with a machete, and I think it's a great, Rumi's making a face. What do you think?
Well, it's a great kill. It's a phenomenal kill, but there's two things about it. One, he gets chopped at an angle that's like, Jason would have to be standing directly next to him to take a machete to the face like that. It was like, if you just pulled the camera back 10 feet, Jason would be standing directly next to him to hit him in the face from the front like that.
Dude, he is a kid who died and then came back, choked a girl in the first one, then grew up in a span of time between the first one and the second one. He became a man.
Well, here's another issue with this is it's a direct copy of a kill, and there's two of them in this movie.
Yeah.
It's this one where the guy gets the machete to the face, but that kill is awesome because he's in a wheelchair, and it knocks him down a flight of stairs. Huge flight of steps.
It's awesome.
That we haven't established exist in this movie. It's just
that's true. I didn't think of that, but they never see those until then.
It's great, though, rolling down the flight of steps with a machete in the face. But this kill and a kill later where two people are having a little sexy time and Jason comes up with a spear and impales both of them at the same time.
Right.
Both those kills, the machete to the face and the spear through people having sexy time, is taken from a film called Bay of Blood, which is a Mario Bava Italian slasher film.
Mm-hmm.
The better title for Bay of Blood was Twitch of the Death Nerve, which
I
wish they had kept, but, you know, Bay of Blood, whatever.
This is, and I feel like these movies were made in, like, really the golden age of at least American horror, right?
Yes.
Between the 70s and the 80s, that's when we really cranked out the best movies, and they were directly influenced by all the Italian ones. Although, dude, I'm looking at the timer, we have 33 seconds.
I want to bring up the end. So, the main girl, Jenny,
mm-hmm.
She finds Jason's little love shack out in the woods. She finds Jason's mother's head set up on a shrine.
Right.
And Jason's mother's filthy sweater. And her plan is, I'm going to trick Jason. So she puts on this filthy, rotting sweater. I'd be like, No, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I'd be like, Jason, here I am. Let's get it. Machete to the face. 6 seconds.
At the end of the movie, Jason's mother's head was supposed to open her eyes and smile, but they thought it was too corny and they did it. Oh, ow.
Oh,
that was good.
We
beat right there.
Yeah.
All right. That was two. This is hard.
This is really hard. Now, since we ran out of time, I'm just going to throw out a couple things left. This is one of the
That's
lowest...
cheating.
I know. I'm a cheater.
This is the lowest
kill count of the series.
You got it.
But it sets up a lot of the tropes for the rest of the series. So, you ready to put another 4 minutes on the clock?
Yep, you got it.
Whew, man.
It's hard.
Yeah, my mind and my heart are racing right now. All right, here we go. 4 minutes on the clock. Friday the 13th, part 3 in 3D.
Rumi just made the number 3 with his hands and pushed it towards my face as he said that. All right, do it up, 3D.
This movie came out in 1982, and this has one of the arguably most annoying characters in the entire franchise in Shelley, the trickster.
Shelley.
Yeah, but we have to give Shelley credit because at one point in the movie, he jumps out wearing a wetsuit and a hockey mask. Why is there a summer camp with hockey masks? It's not a winter camp. It's a summer camp. Why does he have a hockey anyway?
I also like the idea, like, it's brought up that Shelley is the one who had a hockey mask that's how Jason got it. I love that at one point, Jason was, like, looking at the floor and he saw a hockey mask and a wetsuit. And he was like, I choose hockey mask.
Yeah.
You imagine this could have been a whole franchise about a deformed guy wearing a wetsuit killing people.
So this is the movie where Jason gets his hockey mask and becomes the icon that we know. The funny thing is, multiple times in this movie, people see Jason in the hockey mask walking around. They're like, Shelley? Or my husband? Like,
right.
They keep confusing a giant mountain man for the tubby kid.
Little pudgy kid.
With a Bob Ross haircut.
Yeah, big, huge. The third kill of this movie happens like 45 minutes in.
Yeah.
The first couple movies really, especially 1, 2, and 3, they really took their time getting mm-hmm. the average kills down. But it really starts to get there. There are some good kills in here, and I gotta say, it probably works better for the time, but the 3D effects probably were pretty cool. They certainly tried.
Dude, every couple seconds, it's like somebody's like pointing at you or like trying to hand you something through
the screen. Snake jumps at the screen.
Yeah, constantly.
A lot of stabbing implements towards the screen.
An eyeball pop flies at the screen.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I give it to him.
That one's very bad looking, but is actually a pretty cool effect.
Sure.
One of the ones that becomes a Jason staple is he throws a guy into a fuse box, and the guy literally like touches the electrical box. Nothing that would actually electrocute you. He just touches it. It explodes in sparks and flames, and this guy dies. This happens throughout the rest of the series. If you touch electrical components in a Jason movie, you explode in death.
Now, Mythbusters, I know that you guys probably listen to the Famous Monsters podcast. I know that you have debunked other Jason kills before, like from Jason X. You should start throwing people into electrical fuse boxes and see how many times you have to do it till it gets to spark.
Till it sparks and explodes. Another great kill is one of the jokester guys is doing a handstand, and Jason comes up and cuts him down through the legs. Super gnarly, because they shoot it like underneath him, so it's got great depth to this kill.
It's a smart idea.
Yeah, and then you see it later. They show the chopped in half body, and that one's pretty cool. But this one starts getting crazy at the end, you know, there's a new final girl. She survives as much as she can.
Yep.
She's running away from Jason, who spends quite a bit of the end of the movie with his mask off, mm-hmm. which I don't know how I feel about that. But
they were still finding their feet a little bit. They're still trying to figure out.
So she ends up in a canoe, and to reprise the twist from the first movie, Jason's zombie mom pops out of the water and grabs a hold of her.
Which is cool. I'm on board.
It's cool. She has like real worms hanging about her face.
Yeah.
But didn't her head get cut off? How did she got her head back
Zombies,
on?
Zombies, Rumi.
Okay, I know. Well,
this is also a movie where they actually don't say Jason. They don't call him Jason. If you go back and look, and I'm pretty sure it's true, if you go back, they don't say Jason at all.
Do they mention Friday the 13th at all? Probably once.
No.
Probably just like the one time.
I don't think in the whole series, I think there's only mentioned like 3 or 4 times.
Oh my gosh. 5, 4.
We're just counting down the seconds.
2, 1. And that's Friday the 13th, part 3.
We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing good.
we say that, but there's only more notes as we go on. We have more notes about different...
Oh, it just gets more and more ridiculous.
So...
Oh, this was one of the first 3D movies for a new generation of 3D. Like, they tried 3D in the 50s. People were like, okay. And then this was one of the first ones that Paramount had done, specifically Paramount. This was one of their first 3D movies in the new era of 80s 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
And they tried to make it 3D as hard as they could.
And I would say, you know, it worked, and it's a good gimmick. I feel like horror is a great genre for the 3D gimmick.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, you might as well do horror.
Yeah. Speaking of doing it, let's do part four.
All right, here we go. 4 minutes on the clock. Ba-boom!
Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Lies.
Spoiler alert, there's 8 more movies. The final chapter. And this one, I love this one.
This is
very weird. You have this orgy cabin of teenagers right next door to like a divorced single mother with a teenage daughter and Corey Feldman, the young child special effects genius. He's got all these little monsters and stuff. It's weird. I know a lot of movies that have little special effects kids in them. And it's like, I don't understand that trope, but like, I'm on board. Especially if it's Corey Feldman,
well,
I'm on board.
We were both special effects kids.
But I never killed a zombie because of it. Like, that would I guess, wouldn't that be the, like, the high, is that the high water point for any special effects kid to kill a monster?
A monster? Yeah, yeah, that is true. I am definitely not prepared to kill zombie man-childs because of my special effects career.
This movie is notable because not only does it have Corey Feldman, but it has another face you might recognize.
Oh, Crispin Glover's in it.
Yeah, so...
He's the awkward, like, insufferable nerd in this movie.
And he's so insufferable and awkward, there is a famous dance scene where he is dancing to this, and it is wacky.
Yeah.
Rumi's doing the dance right now, and he's nailing it. But if you haven't watched the movie or haven't seen that, you should definitely check out that one dance scene with Crispin Glover. And it's odd, though, because as a movie, it kind of makes him the main character for a while, and at the end, he's not the main character anymore. Because stab, 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 dead! He's killed. I think he gets killed with a cleaver, I think.
Yeah, he gets the cleaver to the face. It's pretty good. Tom Savini did the effects for this
movie. Yes, he came back. He did the first one, and then he came back to do this one.
Yeah.
And it is very good. And the Corey Feldman character, the Tommy Jarvis character, is definitely a little bit of an homage to him. There is also one more familiar face, or maybe I'll say two familiar faces. Doubleman twins are in this movie.
What?
Yeah. There's two twins in the movie who are biking, and they find the rest of the people. And then they're like, oh, you guys are skinny dipping? Cool. Camilla and Carrie Moore are their names.
Yeah. And this movie has a lot of good kills, and then ends with a pretty great square off between Corey Feldman, Felddog, and Jason Voorhees.
It's another thing where they're like, Jason can be confused by dressing up like someone else. In part two, some girl dresses up like his mom. She looks nothing like her except she's wearing a sweater.
Gross sweater.
And in this one,
Corey Feldman shaves his head or puts on a bald cap.
No, he
shaves
his head
and pretends to be a young version of him. I don't know about you, but if somebody came and was like, I'm a young version of you, I'd be like, who are you? Who are you supposed to be? Oh no, you were way too skinny to be me as a young
But I feel that, like, I would always have the presence of mind to know that I was me. So if someone else was like, hey, I'm you, I'd be like, no. Like, by definition, no.
To Jason's credit, I'd be more confused if I was like, wait, weren't you that kid with hair a second? Did you have time to shave your head? Okay, props. But ends up, Jason takes his own machete to the face in an excellent kill.
Yeah,
excellent kill, adding him to the kill list. But that was supposed to be the final chapter, but was it? Hell no.
It was not.
It was not. Well, I'm going to stop the clock here. We got 21 seconds left.
We're doing okay with this timer thing. I was a little worried. We're doing okay. I mean, we're not saying everything we want to say, but if you guys want to listen to the Launchpad podcast, we definitely will talk more about Friday the 13th and Jason stuff. But this is... this is cool. I hope we're doing the Famous Monsters guys proud.
I'm proud of us.
I'm proud of you, Rumi.
Thanks, dog.
Rumi is wearing a Famous Monsters shirt, too.
Yeah, it's the Famous Monsters Dallas convention. It's awesome.
It's the one that they gave us at San Diego interviewed them for our podcast. All right, so that was the final chapter. And what comes after the final chapter?
The new beginning.
Yeah, obviously. Part five, the new beginning.
All right, 4 minutes on the clock. Let's do this.
All right, this was 1985. Rumi, take it away.
This opens with Corey Feldman doing his best Georgie from It impression. He's got a yellow raincoat on. He's standing in front of the grave of Jason Voorhees.
Right.
But then he goes and hides in the woods and watches Jason Voorhees get dug up by some goobers in hats. And Jason Voorhees, who was buried with a screwdriver, kills the goobers. But it's all fake, because something that's become a staple in all the Friday the 13th films is they love to start with a red herring or auxiliary kills that don't really add to the story. But Corey Feldman wakes up and he's grown now. It's a Tommy Jarvis that is much older. He's a teenager now, and he's going to like a mental health farm where troubled kids can go and get better or
in
whatever.
In the woods. Sure.
Yeah, near the lake where everybody got murdered.
Yep. Which I feel is a trope in almost every, I mean, Child's Play 2 has troubled kids.
Yep.
One of the Freddies has troubled kids.
Yep.
Like, troubled kids is a thing in these franchises.
And it's like troubled kids camps where they go and hang out and, like, try to get better and, like, work on a farm or ride horses or whatever.
You think they'd be like, hey, a bunch of troubled kids got killed at that camp. Should we make one next to this evil doll factory?
The movie Ticks with Seth Green is another troubled one. Man, this is I didn't know.
With Seth Green and frickin' what's his name from with Seth Green.
You're wasting my time, Rumi.
The Fresh Prince. That's who I was talking about.
Oh,
forget
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Carlton.
Yep.
Keep going.
So this movie, one of the first kills that isn't a fake kill. Some idiot eating a candy bar gets killed by some other idiot.
He looks like slightly grown up Shelly.
Yeah, he does. He does. And we'll get to this, the character tropes in this in a minute.
Sure.
I do want to come back to that. But he gets killed by an angry guy because he got candy bar
another trouble guy. But and it is kind of a cool kill because it's abrupt. It comes out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. But I'm always annoyed in Jason movies when non-Jason kills somebody. Wasting a kill. Anyway, the paramedics show up and we meet Roy Burns, who is not creepy at all. No, he's absolutely obvious. It's so obvious that he's a creepy weirdo.
To clarify, though, he only has like one or two lines. He's the ambulance driver / body loader.
He's the paramedic guy, yeah. So then Jason shows up and starts killing people. One of the best kills in this movie is somebody gets a road flare jammed in their face and they light up like a jack-o'-lantern.
That's true. That's good, too.
That one's
another
pretty good.
Kill that I really like is like head shears, clipping shears,
yes.
Right to the eyes. A girl gets that.
Yes. Now, that scene, this is interesting because this is one of the more sleazy ones. This has a lot of nudity in it.
Also directed by a porn guy.
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely so.
And that scene where the two people are fooling around the woods and she gets shears to the face and then the boyfriend gets his head twisted up, like crushed by a belt
like
around a tree.
Yeah,
that is a cool scene. And recently we saw a music video called Wolfie's Just Fine, New Beginning. It's a really cool music video, but it's about a kid seeing that scene for the first time.
And it's an amazing video. It's an amazing song. You should check it out. Wolfie's Just Fine.
Wolfie's Just Fine, yeah. You meet some other weird ancillary characters. One guy's like, oh no, I ate too many enchiladas. And he is his girlfriend, while he's in the like outhouse, are starting to like sing a duet to each other, like a little pooping duet.
Well, yeah, while he is ostensibly taking a gnarly, gnarly diarrhea crap, him and his girlfriend are standing on opposite sides of a tin fence.
Singing to each other. And
yeah.
Jason kills both of them. We're going to blow this time because this movie's just super
weird.
We
still have like 40 seconds from the other
one. Right. We can add some on. But our initial timer is up. But so yeah, there's these great kills of people getting chopped up in the outhouse.
And you're supposed to believe that it's Tommy Jarvis. It's older Tommy Jarvis.
You think it's Tommy Jarvis. And this Jason's a little different because he's got a blue mask, which is like, ooh, something new, something different.
Do we see the blue mask through? I know we see the red mask at times in the movie, and that's Tommy Jarvis imagining him. But do we see the blue mask throughout the movie?
Yes, and this is where he wears the iconic like jumpsuit.
Oh, because up until this point, it's been a shirt and pants.
Shirts and pants, or yeah, like overalls with a pillowcase.
Oh yeah, overalls and pillowcase was 2. Shirts and pants was 3 and 4. Okay,
and they totally set up Tommy Jarvis as a badass. Like he knows like some jiu-jitsu. Like they keep showing people like coming up to him and he like flips him over and like anybody who tries to attack him, he defends him. But the second he goes up against Jason just hits him in the chest with a machete. He doesn't die, but he gets gnarly wounded. He makes up for being a total wiener about it by knocking Jason out of a barn into a bed of spikes that I guess are part of a barn thing.
Yeah, that's the barn spiker. You didn't. Rumi didn't grow up in a farm. He's a city folk.
Yeah, I guess I don't know what barn spikes are for.
My favorite part of that is Jason gets impaled on that, and when they go down and they check him, not only did this guy, the killer, have a Jason mask on, but it appears that he also had like a rubber mask underneath, so that when we the audience see him, it looks like a deformed face.
Yeah,
but like, where did he get that? Like in Jason universe, do they have Jason Halloween masks?
Yeah.
So I guess we have O.J. Simpson Halloween masks, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a stretch.
I mean, I guess.
All right, new beginnings. I allow it.
So it turns out to be this Roy Burns. And the reason he went crazy and killed people, because the idiot candy bar kid from the beginning of the movie was his son.
The non-Jason kill, yeah. The non-Jason victim.
But the weirdest thing about that is like, if you came to pick up a body and it was your son, you wouldn't be like, oh my God, that's my son? Nope, you'd just like go about your business?
No, revenge. For no reason. He didn't even kill... Did he kill the guy that... No, I think the guy who killed his son goes to jail. Like, he doesn't die, does he? He's not like the first victim or something.
So weird.
This movie is also... We're running way over time, but I feel like we still have a couple seconds left from the other one. Then we'll get back on track. This movie is also known for doing something that a lot of the movies in this franchise does, where it either starts or ends a certain way that later is like, wait, never mind.
Never mind.
So at the end of this movie, Tommy Jarvis picks up the mask and is like, puts it on and goes to kill his new girlfriend. Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to be the new Jason.
That's the twist at the end. That's the big dun-dun-dun.
Right. And then you're like, oh, okay. And then in part 6, which is one of my favorite, Jason Lives, that movie's like, No, don't worry about that.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah. That movie starts with another... It almost starts very similar to this one, just with no Tommy Jarvis kid watching.
Are we starting it? Should we start it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Part 6? All
part
right.
Part 6, Jason Lives.
Four minutes on the timer.
Part 6. I love this one.
Yeah.
Two yokels come up. Actually, it's a yokel and Tommy Jarvis.
And Tommy Jarvis.
Grown-up Tommy Jarvis, but it's not the nerdy karate one from the last one. It's this cool, suave, good-looking guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, good. I have my stuff more under control. I'll be better handling Jason this time.
Yeah.
They dig up his body because he needs confirmation that Jason's really dead. He flies into a rage and stabs it over and over again with a fence post. And then I believe they bring gasoline because they're going to burn him. I don't know why. He's like laying there dead. Leave him alone. And lightning, of course, hits the fence spike and reanimates him.
It's a spectacular scene, though.
It's great, great. And in my mind, this movie is where this series hits its stride.
Big time.
It really is like, okay, here's how we're doing it. Because kind of now he's like a reanimated corpse kind of deal. Like, and he starts to be a little bit more supernatural than he's been.
Once he's a zombie, they don't have to worry about like things making sense or like anything that really...
Because they were really focused on continuity and scientific stuff before that, Rubes.
You know, the only thing they have to do in this feature is once a movie go, oh yeah, what day is it? Friday the 13th. Good. Okay, let's go. Like, that's all you got to do. How do we get Jason back? Lightning. What day is it? Friday the 13th.
Done.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. There are some great kills in
great.
It. This is my favorite look for Jason. He's got a belt, which for some, like an army belt.
An army belt
got,
with
like,
throwing
pouches
knives.
And stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Rumi likes utility belts.
Oh, if you guys don't know me, I have a multi-tool and a flashlight and my camera and my phone. I have all this stuff hanging from my belt.
But no throwing knives.
Not in the compartments you know about. But yeah, I love this Jason.
This is a good Jason. This movie, basically Tommy shows up and is like, we got to kill Jason, you guys. Jason's back. Goes to the cops to try and get them to help him, and they're like, you're crazy, kid, get out of our town.
Even though there's already been 6 Jason or 5 Jason things have happened.
Yeah, stay out of Crystal Lake, Tommy Jarvis, Lebowski.
I know you love that cops think the kids are stupid, yeah. Even though it's this is the 6th movie in a franchise, yeah. And the cops are like, no way Jason's back.
No way. We know he's killed 30 people at this point, but no way.
Fool me 4 times, shame on you.
So Tommy Jarvis is having none of it. He will not stay away, even though they like escort him to the edge of town, even though they eject him, even though they give him a chance to leave on his own. They ended up locking him up because he's just causing a mess. And then we meet the sheriff's daughter.
The sheriff's hot daughter.
And she's all like, ooh, Tommy Jarvis, he's cute and crazy, and I'm into it. And it makes me wonder, because he's like, stay away from the prisoners. It's like, does she do this every time he has like a hot drunk stuck in that lockup? And she's like, ooh, hey, he's dangerous. I like that.
Yes.
It's like, of course, she helps him escape and they go on like this Smokey and the Bandit style chase scene where she drives this fast car away from the cops. They finally catch them both, but Jason's running amok the entire time, killing everybody.
Some great kills in this too. A girl gets killed in an RV bathroom. And he pushes her face into the wall, and we see the exterior, and her face gets pushed out like Freddy in the first one. And it makes this great, like, Coke can crunching sound. It's super cool. That's a great
super
one.
Super good.
A girl gets her head ripped off. A dude gets bent back in half.
That
just
one's awesome.
Collapsed in half by Jason. It's a great idea. And this is the first movie, too, where I feel like this entire franchise was neutered by the MPAA, and there's a lot of, like, ratings bullshit that cut a lot of kills and gore out. This one was able to navigate that better than the other ones. 2 seconds.
And this one also is one of the only ones to actually show kids at camp.
Yes, and I read about that, and then rewatching the first one last night. The first one, during the very, very first scene, where the first people are killed, you see kids sleeping. But this is that and this are the only times that you see kids at camp.
These movies couldn't afford to have children in the movie about a children's summer camp.
And I think this is scarier with the kids.
It's crazy because it ends with him, Jason, like stalking through the bunkhouses while the kids are asleep, and some of them wake up and get freaked out. And like the daughter of the sheriff is trying to hide the children while Tommy's trying to distract Jason from hunting them down.
And the best part about that, and this is a personal aside, Jason doesn't really menace any of the kids or do anything for the kids, but he almost, there's a couple times where he's looking through a window or he's walking towards them, but then something else gets his attention. So was he going to kill them? Now, I remember watching this movie on USA as a kid and being flipped out, and my dad told me Jason doesn't kill kids. And as a result of that, like in that movie, he doesn't, and he could have. So in my kid mind, I was like, whew, okay, Jason doesn't kill kids. But now I watch this, and it's not clear whether his motivation was to kill the kids or he just didn't get to it. So like, not only is Jason possibly a child murderer, or are my parents liars? Like,
no, I think it's because he doesn't want revenge. He wants revenge on counselors.
Correct. But if you watch that movie, there's a couple times where he looks like he's about to go in and mess up some kids.
Yeah.
And I can't guarantee that's the case because if they showed a part where he walked up to a sleeping kid and then walked away, you know that kid is safe. But if he's looking down at a sleeping kid with a machete in his hand and then Tommy Jarvis shows up, Jason, and Jason runs after him, that doesn't mean that kid wasn't going to get killed.
Well, depends on what continuity you want to follow. And we know this franchise loves to follow continuity.
The next one starts where he's already killed a bunch of children.
Well, real quick to finish this one up, it ends with a sweet fight in a boat where Tommy Jarvis is trying to put a rock with a chain around Jason's neck.
Yeah.
He manages to do so, but the water's on fire. Like, gas is spilled on the water and it catches on fire, and him and Jason are tussling in the boat. It's a great fight scene.
It
and
is.
It ends with a cool image of Jason stuck underwater, being held deep in the in the Camp Crystal Lake with a rock around his neck and a chain. And I think that is such a cool image.
Is that the one with the motorboat to the face, too?
Is it?
I think so. And when I say motorboat, I mean the outboard engine of a motor, not a busty chick doing Jason. Yeah, no, I think that's part of, like, I think Jason's struggling, turns the motor on.
He turns the motor on, chops him up real good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, and the mask floats down to the bottom.
Right.
And then in the next one, he starts with the mask on his face again. Anyway, let's start the timer. Friday the 13th, part 7.
The New Blood. This is 1988. Take it, Rumi.
All right. Actually, in real life, they were trying to make a Freddy versus Jason here in 1988, but they couldn't get on the same page. It wouldn't be till years later that they could actually make that movie happen. So then they're like, well, let's have him fight another famous character. Let's have him fight Carrie from Stephen King's novel. And they were like, the owners of that property were like, Stephen King was like, no.
I love the short list of that where they're like, he should fight Freddy.
Yeah.
Like, no, I can't do that. He should fight, who else could he fight? Carrie.
So they couldn't get Carrie, but they're like, there isn't a monopoly on psychic chicks. So this is basically Jason versus Carrie. A psychic chick opens the movie. She kills her abusive drunk dad with her mind powers.
Sure.
And then the movie starts where it kicks into like Friday the 13th movie time. Her going back to the place where it all happened with her doctor who's helping her figure out her psychic powers, her mom, and their next door neighbors, which is a party house full of kids.
Yep. And there are some great deaths here. There's some really cool stuff. But again, this is another one of the entries in this franchise that I feel was just completely neutered by the ratings code. Yep. There's a party horn to the face.
Oh, and it makes a honking noise.
Awesome. But you should have shown that a little bit better. But it's a great kill.
It has one of the best kills in the franchise.
I already know which one you're going to say.
A fan favorite. But it's preceded by one of the dumbest lines ever.
Do it.
A girl and a guy are in the woods camping. She's all like, I'm feeling sexy. And he's like, I'm going to go chop some wood. And she says, okay, you big hunk of a man, come and get me. If I was her boyfriend, I'd be like, nope, still chopping wood. Like, I'd be hiding in the woods. Yeah, I'm out.
No, I'm out.
Well, Jason kills her boyfriend and then comes to the tent, cuts the tent open, grabs the sleeping bag with the naked chick in it, and slams it against a tree. And it is one of the best kills in the whole franchise.
And again, to my point, I heard that there was a lot more slamming and blood in that scene, but they cut it. It's still awesome. Luckily, we revisit that in a later movie. There's also someone gets punched right through their chest. I believe the heart comes out too, right?
Isn't that, that's how the boyfriend dies.
Yeah. And that's a good one. At least you get to see that one a little
bit. And the boyfriend was chopping wood with a machete because that's what you chop wood with. And that's where Jason gets his machete in this movie.
There's a little known fact about a motorized weapon in this one, right?
Yeah. So later in the movie, Tina, Jason kills, he kills her doctor, the doctor who's helping her with
Dr.
his...
Dr. Jackass. He's a mean guy. Ugh, I'm a doctor. I'm going to exploit your powers.
He kills him with a motorized like weed whacker, and it's one of the only times Jason kills anybody with a power tool.
This movie is another one of my favorites in the franchise because at this point, it's starting to be like, listen, I know what this is about. First of all, I love this Jason because his clothes are tattered, and what you can see through, it's a little cheesy looking, but it's awesome. He looks like a zombie.
It's skeleton,
see,
yeah.
You can see a lot of his skeleton stuff. On the back. Yep, you can see stuff like that. I think that looks cool.
And this is the first time Kane Hodder plays Jason.
Correct.
And he played Jason the most.
The most out of anybody, yeah. And he does a great job. I love it. At the end of this movie, there is a fight between the pseudo Carrie and Jason where she's using mind powers. The light breaks and a cord comes down and grabs him and strangles him and stuff. It's very, very silly and very, very stupid. But you're watching the seventh movie in a Jason franchise.
Yeah.
What do you want from it? And I'm having fun. His mask pops open like this.
Yeah. His mask opens up like saloon doors.
You know what he looks like? He looks like the zombie from the movie House.
Yes.
It's very cartoony.
There's our time limit, but let's finish it up.
We owe seconds, but it looks so cartoony. Why would that happen? I guess she got psychic powers, but like it doesn't matter. I've watched seven movies now. I'm in it.
And it's a great fight because Kane Hodder, I think, he gets so beat up in these scenes. At one point, she lights him on fire, and it's one of the longest. At the time, it was a record for an uncontrolled body burn.
It was 40 seconds.
42 seconds, something like that. But he actually gets burned really bad, like still is scarred from being in this movie. And so he catches on fire, and then the house is on fire, and she runs away, gets away. And the house explodes, like vaporizes.
Which is another nod to Carrie, if you really think about it.
I guess. But that doesn't kill Jason. He shows up as a barbecue Jason. No mask on. He's all crispy. He's smoking. And she gets back on the dock, the famous Crystal Lake dock. Jason's attacking her. You know, the boyfriend or whatever is trying to stop Jason. But, you know, Jason...
Nice job, boyfriend.
Yeah. Using her psychic powers, her dad comes back to life and saves her.
Her abusive alcoholic dad.
Yeah, who was...
Who she killed for those reasons.
Yes, exactly. Comes back and pulls Jason underwater. Kind of dumb.
I would watch a team-up movie where Jason's mom and her dead alcoholic abusive dad teamed up for revenge.
To fight Jason?
Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, or a buddy cop movie where they were just cops. He's an abusive father who was drowned in a lake.
She's a camp chef who had her head cut off.
They're in a camp. Corrupted by crime. Woo, woo, woo. What would you call it? Crystal Lake PD?
Yeah.
Camp Crystal Cops?
Camp Crystal Cops. District 13. Dun, 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 dun. Assault on Precinct 13, Crystal Lake Edition.
Assault on Cabin 13. Oh my God, we have so many ideas for movies. That'd be awesome.
The whole time they have to have real worms just hanging out of their faces.
That'd be so cool. And then there's like a love scene at the end that you don't want to watch, but you're happy that they found each other.
So some tidbits about this movie so we can wrap it up. The film had been submitted 9 times to the MPAA before getting an R rating, and it stands as one of the most heavily censored ones in the Friday the 13th series, which I think really hurts it, but what can you do? And then originally, because the final chapter wasn't final enough, this was supposed to be called Part 7, Jason's Destroyer. And I think they're really trying to hit that they were trying to end this franchise.
And there's multiple times where the studio was like, we should stop making these movies. But people kept seeing them, so they were like, well...
If you put the name, like, final chapter on there, or the end, or, like, the destroy, like, you gotta cut it. You have to.
Do you, though? I feel like you were making, like... The 13th entry in like a romantic comedy series, and you said final, they'd call you on it.
Yeah.
But when you make like the final Friday and then add 3 more movies, or if you say the final chapter and add 8 more movies,
Freddy's dead.
Yeah, yeah. Horror fans are like, all right. Yeah. We're dealing with a guy who drowned, came back, and is unstoppable and can catch you without running. And it's like...
It's like the people who did the Jason Lives. They were like, challenge accepted, Final Friday.
Well, that brings us to part 8, which is a real good one.
4 minutes on the clock. Tell it, Rumi.
Part 8 is Jason Takes Manhattan, or as Rumi calls it,
Jason Takes a Boat to Manhattan.
If you haven't seen this movie, it starts with some stupid, like, senior, like, graduating class goes on a boat trip.
Oh, but these kids all look like they're 35.
Oh,
like,
for sure. There's not a single one that you buy as a high school age kid. Most of these people are, like, older than the teachers. Ugh, I can't even. I'm wasting time here. It starts on a boat. There are, you know, it's fine, but you called it Jason Takes Manhattan. If it was called Jason Takes a Boat, this movie, I would have no qualms with it, really.
It spends the most of the film on the boat. What's the boat's name? The Lazarus. Subtle, guys. Really subtle.
Challenge accepted, Jason, part 7.
What brings Jason back in this one?
I don't remember.
It's a boat anchor that snags a power line that somehow Jason's touching, and it brings him back to life.
And this is a different boat, too. It's yeah. two other idiots two other who idiots didn't join the senior... Oh, actually, they're late to the senior trip, but they're banging in this boat, and because of that... Oh, and the dude dresses up like Jason to scare his girlfriend, which is how Jason gets his mask back.
His mask back, but the kid has a mask that's so screen accurate, it even has the hatchet mark where he got hit in...
From 5.
One of the earlier movies. Ridiculously accurate. That guy really enjoys his screen-made props.
And Jason gets on this boat. He starts killing all these girls. And, of course, there's plenty of girls who are doing drugs, having sex. Girls and guys having sex, screwing around. Yep. One girl's just making a rock and roll video in the boat basement.
Yeah. she's got a pink flying V guitar.
And how does he kill her? He
smashes her in the face with it.
It's not bad, and it's
he's like, I hate hair metal and premarital sex.
This one, and it gets a lot of guff because it was shot a lot in Vancouver.
Yeah,
and nothing against Canada, but like it feels like it was shot somewhere else on the cheap.
Yep.
They tried to cut corners.
I want to talk about two kills. There's an idiot kid with a video camera, and it's one of those old school ones that practically took two hands to carry
because it takes a VHS. Yeah.
And he also has a shotgun that he can barely carry. And this kid accidentally shoots one of the ship maintenance guys.
Because he loses his glasses and someone jumps in front of him.
It's still dumb as hell.
And they don't even go into it. Like, there's not like that wasn't Jason or that was a human. He's just like, oh, well.
He just kills this guy with a shotgun. But then Jason grabs his kid and throws him up against like some sort of control panel. Kid just touches it, explodes in sparks and flames. Classic Jason. And then, like, on the boat the whole time, the main girl is, like, being haunted by a very inconsistent ghost of young Jason. Sometimes he's normal. Sometimes he's all deformed. Sometimes he has hair. It's like every time you see him, it's just different. And you're like, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Her visions were seasick.
The whole time, the boat is also in, like, a master and commander level storm. Like, like ridiculous pouring rain.
Yep.
But they finally are like, okay, there's enough murder on this boat. Let's get off
this
boat. Wait,
before they even do that, there's a part where a guy's running from Jason, and he starts climbing. He looks up and sees the crow's nest, and he starts climbing towards the crow's nest. And it's showing you, like, this thing is probably, like, 20 yards tall. And then he looks down, and there's no one. He climbs, and Jason is right behind him, which I think is a great nod to that, like, Jason always is right there, even though he doesn't run after you.
And they do that. There's another scene where there's a girl inside of a ballroom, and Jason, like, teleports around the room. So... this movie, Jason teleports. So they get off the boat. Finally,
we're doing
they're
so bad with this.
I know we're
thing.
Failing.
we owe Famous Monsters so many seconds.
I know.
Keep going.
So they finally get to Manhattan. They finally get there, and it immediately starts with the main character girl being abducted by creepy like punk dudes, and they inject her with heroin and start like assaulting her.
Sure.
And Jason saves her. So thanks, Jason.
Yeah, it's weird because at that point you're like, I don't know what I want to happen.
I don't know what's supposed to happen. I don't want any of this to happen.
Who am I rooting for?
Stop this all. Yeah. So she doesn't seem to be whacked out on heroin after that, but
she's like a little tired.
Yeah.
She's a little tired, but she's also had a big boat trip.
Yeah. Days at sea make me exhausted. Yeah. So then we get to one of the kill you were about to mention.
Yeah, there's a big boxing fight that it's there's a character who they've laid the groundwork and said that he's a boxer. We've seen him box earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
And he's fighting Jason, and finally he just takes it off. He's ready to box. So there's a boxing match on top of
rooftop. It goes on for like a minute and a half.
And the guy is just wailing on Jason.
Wailing on Jason.
Wailing. And finally Jason punches his head off.
One punch.
And
kill.
It bounces down and hits a thing and then bounces into the dumpster and the dumpster closes on it. Now, the funny thing with that is they originally wanted that fight to take place at Madison Square Garden. because the in their mind, he was going to take Manhattan. He was going to be on top of the Statue of Liberty. He was going to do all these other, like, very stereotypical New York things. And then they were like, you know, we have $4 million or something. They were like, no.
No, we're not going to do that.
No, you could shoot the Statue of Liberty from the water. That's about it.
Well, he does get into Times Square. They have a great, like, high production value. Jason standing in the middle of Times Square.
Yeah, and they did shoot that there. Everything else is shot in Vancouver.
Everything else,
if you
yeah.
watch, it does not look, it does not feel like New York.
So this movie just starts getting dumber and dumber. They end up down in the sewer where they meet this guy who works there, and he's like, you better get out of here, kids. And they're like, why? He's like, every night the sewer floods with toxic waste at midnight. I'm like, what? Does the EPA know about this?
This is like just the shittiest version of New York City that ever existed. Like, worse than any Daredevil Frank Miller comic book that you've ever read, where you're like, that happened in the middle of Times Square? You're like, yeah, and there's toxic waste sewers. You're like, all right.
Floods with toxic waste. Like, just, you're going to drown in toxic waste if you stay here. I'm like, how long has this been going on?
So... How does the movie end?
So then Jason comes down to the sewers, of course. He's chasing Remy and the boyfriend character. She splashes toxic waste on Jason's face.
That she finds in a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah, just chilling. Jason pulls his mask off because the toxic waste burns and reveals the dumbest face. He looks like a melted gummy bear. He looks stupid. Stupid. It's just the dumbest,
well,
dumbest
face. Well, he's melting, so I'm going to give it to the
no.
design.
No, the last movie when the saloon door mask pops off, that face, even though it's cheesy, is still cool. This one looks like an inside-out Halloween mask.
Yeah, it looks kind of like out of kit. Like, yeah. They were like, wait, you see him unmasked in this?
Yeah, what are we going to do? Quick, put toilet paper and some liquid latex on his face. Go. It's so dumb. But then the sewer starts to flood with toxic waste, just green shit flowing everywhere, and Jason sees it, and he remembers... Oh, no, I'm scared of water. So he starts crying like a baby and puking up water.
And he yells out, Mommy, save me, right?
Yes, he starts screaming like an idiot, crying, which is not the way I want to see my big monster horror slashers. He starts crying, puking up water out of fear. He gets covered in the toxic waste, and then what happens?
He turns back into a child.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the Retromutagen ooze. It's like backwards again. The Shredder. What if the Shredder was behind that? What if the Shredder... was trying to either eliminate the turtles or thought Jason was a threat. So the Shredder unleashed all that ooze.
The camera pans over and Raphael's standing there and goes, where do they come up with this stuff? So they leave a dead child Jason in the sewers. He gets his hair back too, by the way.
Good.
So they leave him in the sewers and it ends dumb.
Couple fun facts about that. It was directed by a guy named Rob Hedden. He actually wrote and directed for the Friday the 13th TV series. You knew there was a series, right?
Yeah.
Some of you guys might not realize there was a Friday the 13th series that came out, you know, kind of capitalizing on this. It wasn't about Jason. It wasn't about the hockey mask. It wasn't about Camp Crystal Lake. It was like an anthology series, similar to like Freddy's Nightmares, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the director of this wrote and directed for that series. And also, Elizabeth Berkley tried out for the female lead. You know who Elizabeth Berkley is?
Remind me.
She played Jessie Spano on Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I'm so scared.
A very special episode.
She could have been in this movie. Here's the thing, man. We've now cheated a little bit and gotten a little bit over.
Yeah.
Are we going to have time for the next movie? Like, Jason Goes to Hell is a big one, but...
I think I got this, dude.
You think you could do it?
You want to let me do it?
This is all you. Jason Goes to Hell, 1993. Kill it, Rumi.
All right. 4 minutes on the clock. Go. All right. Jason Goes to Hell, 1993. This is 23-year-old first-time director... Camp Crystal Lake. The FBI shows up and kills Jason with bullets, but Jason goes up like a gas tank. He blows up, explodes, but even though there's that big of a fireball, there's still enough body parts to do an autopsy. So the body gets flown to Ohio. Beautiful Youngstown, Ohio. And mid-autopsy, the coroner decides to eat the heart. Yummy. Jason now possesses this guy, and you can tell that Jason is possessing him because you can see Jason in mirrors. It's like the Denzel Washington movie Fallen, but with much less whistling of Rolling Stones songs. Coroner Jason now goes and kills some SWAT team security guards, one of them played by Kane Hodder, who gets killed off screen. That's so sad. But we're then introduced to a slimeball investigative reporter named Robert Campbell. He's interviewing Creighton Duke, which is one of the best characters in the series. He's a serial killer bounty hunter who hunts Jason Voorhees. And he has a great line. Like when he's asked, what comes to mind when you hear the words Jason Voorhees? He says, I think of a little girl in a pink dress sticking a hot dog through a donut.
That is an exact quote.
Super weird, dude. Creepy Campbell offers Duke money to prove that Jason's dead. He says okie dokie and heads to Ohio. Beautiful Ohio. At a crappy Ohio Place Diner, we meet Diana, the half-sister of Jason Voorhees, and Steven, who is Diana's daughter's Jessica's baby's daddy.
I'm with you.
Yeah, this movie's trying to establish the Voorhees family tree in the ninth movie for some reason. Duke shows up and creeps Diana out, and the cops take him away. Meanwhile, Coroner Jason kills some kids in the wood with one of the best kills in the series, but only in the unrated version. He jams a signpost through a naked chick mid-coitus and then rips her in half by yanking the pole through her.
Awesome.
And then the boyfriend just gets killed off screen. Lame. Then Coroner Jason captures a cop and for some reason takes all his clothes off and ties him to a table, shaves him because Jason must hate beards, and open mouth kisses him.
Nice.
Steven goes to talk to Diana, but cop Jason shows up and kills Diana. Steven thinks he kills the cop Jason, but things get complicated, even more complicated than this, when the body disappears and Steven gets pegged for the crime. Steven ends up at the police station in lockup next to Creighton Duke, and Duke offers to explain the whole thing to Steven, but only if he can break Steven's fingers. Yeah.
It's true.
Steven is a crude negotiator and says, sure, break my fingers, and he snaps his digits in half. Don't worry, though, this doesn't seem to affect Steven at all for the rest of the movie. Steven escapes and goes to the Voorhees house, which has the real Necronomicon in it, like the one from Evil Dead 2. Steven falls through the shoddy floorboards while looking at the Necronomicon, but not before seeing the crappy Campbell guy show up and get attacked by cop Jason. Some French kitchen action goes down, and now Jason is a slimy crime show host. Cop Jason then melts. It's spectacular, but again, why? Also, in a bit of forced exposition, Diana's body appears at the Voorhees house because that plot needs it. Steven goes to save Jessica from Campbell Jason, but she hates his guts and pushes Steven out of a moving car. Jessica runs to the cops, and the cops go and get Steven. Campbell Jason shows up at the police station and starts making a mess. Steven arrives back at the police station to save Jessica. They escape and run back to that crappy diner to get Jessica's baby. Campbell shows up, and we get an unnecessarily slow 300-style shootout. Lots of people die. Steven and Jessica escape and find Duke and the baby are chilling back at the Voorhees house. Jessica heads off on her own, confronts Duke. He explains some Voorhees blood resurrection shit, and we get an added layer to this movie with the Voorhees knife that when Jessica grabs it, turns into a sword like Thundercats. Thundercats, ho! Now, Duke falls through the floorboards because, damn, this house is built like an IKEA-quality bookshelf. Two cops show up, and one of them might be Jason, but whatever. Jessica kills one of the cops with her Lion-O sword, but it's the wrong cop. And now Jason Cop 2 has the baby, and he tries to French kiss it. Jason goes to hell? What the hell? Steven shows up in the nick of time, once again, chops off the creeper cop's head. A demon critter crawls out of the stump, and we have a Gremlin-style critter hunt. The critter crawls up the corpse of dead Diana's baby place, and Jason bursts through the IKEA floorboards, hockey mask and all. His head is like a giant tumor trying to eat the hockey mask. Nom nom, I'm hungry for hockey masks. Jason hugs Duke to death, which is a lame kill for such a cool character, and Jessica stabs him with the Thundercat sword. In a spectacular-like show, a bunch of hands come out of the ground and drags Jason to hell. Jessica and Steven walk off into the sunset. But what about the baby? We don't see if they pick him up. We don't know if they have the baby. We just see them walk off into the sunset. Great. Then we get a shot of Jason's mask lying on the ground, and Freddy's clawed hand comes out of the ground and drags it beneath the dirt. That is the bizarre wackiness that is Jason Goes to Hell, and I didn't make it, Rumi. I failed. I didn't make
you
it
did
4 minutes.
You did pretty good, though.
Yeah.
You did all right.
Like 4.5 minutes.
And I feel like the listeners needed to know this.
Yeah. It is that crazy.
Because if you haven't seen it, it's not really a Jason movie. Like, it's all over the place. It's basically, Jason's presence is wearing different bodies. I won't say too much more except that you had mentioned the Necronomicon appears. Not only is it the Necronomicon, it is the actual prop from Evil Dead 2, and they were putting that in like the Freddy glove because they wanted to make a Evil Dead Jason Freddy mashup, which sadly, although it never made it into a movie, it did become a graphic novel.
Pretty good comic book, too.
Yeah, it's not bad.
The melt scene is super awesome in this movie, too.
There's also someone gets killed by getting their face smashed through a grated table, and then you could see like the chunks falling through, and it gets pulled back out. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty good.
It's kind of like the Play-Doh.
Yeah, the Play-Doh factory where you smush it through
the grate.
Exactly.
It was kind of like that, but Jason's Play-Doh factory. I'd buy that. I'd buy the shit out of that. We got Jason 10.
Okay, 4 minutes on the clock, boom. I like this movie.
I love it, too, and I feel like we can make up some time here by just saying how much we like it.
Yeah.
Jason X, Jason Goes to Space. This is 2001.
You'd think that for a movie about a guy going to space, it'd be pretty dumb.
Wait a minute. Are you going to tell me this isn't dumb?
No. I'm going to say this movie is dumb, but for a movie about a killer zombie man going to space, it's pretty awesome.
Totally works. I give it a passing grade. It definitely works. It's fun. It's, remember, people, this is the 10th movie in a franchise about this boy who drowned and comes back and gets killed and comes back and kills and doesn't kill and then becomes a different guy and doesn't kill. It's great. It this movie, actually, if you really like think about it, it kind of ignores pretty much everything after, I think, like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Jason tries to kill these people. He ends up getting cryogenically frozen. He gets unfrozen.
Like 400 years
later. A long time into the future. They get him on a spaceship. They're bringing him back, and he wakes up because there's people banging. And
he hates that.
He totally hates it. You imagine, like, he's sleeping and he looks over and he's like, what was that banging noise?
Yeah.
He gets up, he starts killing people. It's great. There's some great kills in there.
What's your favorite kill in this movie?
Easily favorite kill is a girl gets her head slammed into a vat of liquid nitrogen.
Yeah.
She comes out frozen and, like, messed up, and then he just smashes her head on the table and it explodes.
Explodes.
It's great.
Ice cubes everywhere.
Super, super cool. There are a lot of great stabbing deaths. There are a lot of really creative things. They definitely were not as hindered by the ratings as other films in this franchise were.
One of my favorite moments is in it is to trick Crazy Jason. They put him on the holodeck of the ship and make him think he's in like 80s style Camp Crystal Lake. And there's two girls there who are like, hey, want to have premarital sex and smoke pot? And he proceeds to put them in sleeping bags and smash them into each other.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's pretty awesome.
It's great. And it's super fun. You could tell that it was like, guys, we're the 10th movie. Let's just have fun.
Yeah.
Let's just kill. It's exactly what you want without being pandering.
No.
You know? It's a ton of fun.
And at least it's different. Like, you've already made Jason Takes Manhattan. So anything you do is better. It's like...
Low point for the franchise, you think?
That or Goes to Hell, but at least Goes to Hell has some gnarly kills in it.
Yeah, that's true. This is fun. Little known fact, if you look really closely, you can see David Cronenberg playing a like government lackey type character beginning, someone who wants to like use Jason as a tool.
He should be a weapon.
Yeah, David Cronenberg, film
luck
director.
With that.
Jason throws a spear right through his back.
Yeah, it's pretty good. This movie... ends pretty cool. Like, Jason is out in the vacuum of space and he's having a fight with another character, the badass like sergeant in like the security guy. He's like a space marine.
Same guy who gets kicked down a well in 300.
Yeah.
This is Sparta!
This is Jason X! They're fighting in space and this dude rides Jason like a missile into the atmosphere of space, and the last shot we see of this movie is these two teenagers like kissing by a lake and the shooting star comes down. And to me that's hilarious because that movie technically ends like most like 50s style space movies start, like, oh, did you see that shooting star?
Sure, yeah.
Let's go
see
what it is.
That's true. I didn't think of that,
like,
but
the blob,
that's kind of cool.
Well, 34 seconds left.
All right, let's carry that over into the next one. There are still more movies to this franchise.
Oh, my gosh. Jason X came out in 2001. We didn't get to see more Jason again until 2003, where we finally got the team up of Freddy versus Jason. 4 minutes on the clock. Go.
This is really like, it's almost like the high watermark, because again, I feel like some movies you wait forever for, and then when you see them, it's pandering. It's they're just giving you what you want in a way that's not good. This is the opposite. This is giving you what you want, and it is perfect.
They nailed it. I don't know, like, if you tried to make up how to put these two characters in the same movie and make it good,
sure,
I think you would fail 9 times out of 10. They nailed it. It works. It works in the best ways. I think there's definitely room for improvement at certain points, but the kills are great. Jason looks awesome. Freddy is awesome. Mm-hmm. Even though he does some kung fu weirdness, but whatever.
Yeah, right. It's definitely cartoony, but I agree with what you just said. My favorite part of that movie is how they get the two together.
Yeah.
Because really, again, this is now the 11th Jason movie?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
But they really did a great job bringing these guys together. Freddy is trying to use Jason to commit murders and stuff. That way, Freddy will get back into the public consciousness.
Because it's
and he'll get more powerful.
Yeah, because of the
people
fear.
Remember him, right.
But then Jason doesn't like this plan and starts... just not stopping when he's supposed to.
First of all, each character has a pretty distinct, and I think true to their own franchise, voice.
Yeah.
Freddy feels like Freddy and he acts like Freddy. Jason feels like Jason and he acts like Jason. Jason is supposed to be the more sympathetic character. You're supposed to kind of get where he's coming from a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's still killing people and killing people pretty cool, which is great.
There's a cornfield rave in this movie that Jason shows up
awesome.
In.
Awesome.
his machete catches on fire, and he's like hacking kids up with a flaming machete,
which is like super cool.
Super cool. Freddy has some good kills in it. I mean, it's super solid, super fun. Ends at Camp Crystal Lake with a great epic battle between
the two
Freddy
of them fighting, and it really is—it's everything you'd want it to be.
Yeah,
really.
They nailed it, and I think this is one of my favorite films in both franchises.
I would agree.
Definitely is. I mean, I just wish they make more movies like this.
It really is. Like, they really did. I don't know if it was on purpose or on accident, but they did away with all the stupid BS that you wouldn't want.
Yeah,
and it's awesome. Even the human characters, like the teens and stuff, are pretty cool. I could deal without the stoner guy because, like, who cares about him?
Oh, he's just a Jay from Jay and Silent Bob Ripoff.
Right, but everyone else is like kind of okay, and I like some of their lines,
yep.
And it really capitalizes on every strength of those two.
It's my
franchises.
Favorite glove for Freddy.
Oh, that's true. And Rumi is a huge... Freddy's one of, if not your favorite movie monsters,
one of
right?
my favorite of the, slasher
so
franchise.
You definitely know more about him. Like, I feel like I know a lot and like a lot about the different Jason wardrobes. I don't know if we're going to have time to get into that, but you know a lot about the gloves, and you like this one.
This is the thickest, biggest bladed glove. They needed something that could go up against the machete. It was awesome.
Oh, and see, this is my one of, if not my least favorite Jason, because the machete looks like a sword.
Yeah.
I told you, the military one in Jason Lives the most, mm-hmm. but he's just kind of got like a shirt on. It almost looks like his mom dressed him to be a Halloween zombie. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, what do zombies wear? Overly large pants that are ripped? Here you go.
Here you go. All right. With 38 seconds left, I think we could get Jason 2009, the Jason remake, out of the way in 33 seconds.
Yeah, it wasn't good. End of story.
it was a soft reboot. The thing I learned took away from is Jason hates people messing with his weed. A bunch of teenagers show up looking for, like, a secret weed crop at Crystal Lake. Instead, they find Jason, and it's just kind of a soft reboot because he doesn't have... It's the baghead Jason at first, then he finds the hockey mask, but it's just a rehash of a lot of our favorite kills. Like, they do a new version of the sleeping bag kill, but he, like, puts him in the fire. It's cool. It's fine. It's, I think, not the worst in the franchise, but it definitely is nothing new. And, you know, just keep it creative, guys.
And that's it. It was nothing new. They didn't do anything we didn't see. They didn't amp up anything different. They didn't change anything just enough. They just kind of, it was just like, it wasn't bad. And I feel like you and I have talked about this before.
Yep.
The Texas Chainsaw remake with Jessica Biel,
that
was fun. That was cool. It was a little bit different than the original, and that made it stand apart. This one didn't stand apart. Friday the 13th, 2009, was just like, all right, it's fine.
It was dead in the middle as far as kill count goes, dead in the middle as far as creative kills go. Didn't make Jason memorable or different anyway, but, you know, whatever, it exists. And if you want something creepy to watch on, you know, in October, it's there.
Boo! Scare ya? I scared him a little.
Well, that got us through all of them. There is another one that is in development hell right now. Paramount's sitting on it.
Jason goes to development hell.
Yeah, right. Which is unfortunate. I just think they should just make more of these movies. Like we said, it doesn't matter. Find out how he comes back. Find out who he's killing and go.
Well, they got to get with the old teams because part one was 80, part two was 81, part three was 82.
Dude, they
part
just
four
cranking
was 84.
Them out.
Like, they just had a factory just shooting them out. And it's a different situation now than it was then. But yeah, some more Jason movies would be good.
So that wraps up all the films. There's a couple things I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
And I mentioned earlier I wanted to talk about the tropes of characters in this movie. If you were a red shirt in a Friday the 13th movie.
Why would I be a red shirt? I'm the survivor girl.
As long as you're not a candy bar eating Shelly, I think you're fine, right?
Dude, I'm the hot chick who's not having sex and won't show her boobs. That's me.
You want to know who I am?
Yes, I do.
I'm one of the idiot jokesters who's like, hey guys, let's have a talent show. And I'm like doing like magic tricks and crap. Like,
like everyone else just wants to go in the other room and bone.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, let's do a show.
Yeah.
That is you.
I got like cups and balls and I'm like, guess where it is? But like Jason kills me with a magic wand or something. Like he stabs me and then like a bird flies out of my.
No, what would be awesome is if Jason stabbed you with the magic wand, cut. And then later on in the movie, I find your body hanging on the door by the wand. And as the door slowly swings open and I see it's you, that's when the bird comes out.
Or flowers pop out of the end of the wand.
Flowers come out of the wand. That would be great. Oh, God. Oh, man. No, who would... I think I wouldn't be the magic guy.
You wouldn't be the jock.
I don't think I'd be the jock. I think I would either just be some random idiot.
You'd be the guy doing handstands and climbing trees and stuff.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
Ruby's seen me do many a handstand and climb trees.
I've seen you climb some trees, yeah.
You've seen Ruby see me climb up a tree, across branches to a different tree, and then down the trunk of that tree.
That was impressive.
Remember there was a little kid watching? We were at a park, a little kid was watching, and then I said, you gonna try next? And he said, I'm a skater heights.
You'd be the guy juggling.
That would be me. That's only one step away from the magic guy.
Yeah.
Either way, Ruby and I would not be having sex with a hot girl during these movies while getting killed.
No, you'd have your,
we'd be by ourselves.
Juggling balls jammed through your face or something.
It's funny because the first couple movies have that character where, like, I'm not with a girl, I'm walking around sad because I'm lonely, and then murdered. That's us. Well, think about what character you would be.
Yeah, who would you be?
Let us know. You can find Famous Monsters is on Facebook at FMOFL.
You can find them on Instagram and Twitter at Famous Monsters.
And YouTube at Famous Monsters. So get on those. Tell us who you would be in this franchise. What stereotypical character would you be? We still have so much stuff that we want to talk about. There are numerous Friday the 13th video games.
Yeah.
Rumi, why don't we head back to the launch pad and talk about those there? So if you guys want to listen to us.
Yeah, you can listen to us. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Launchpad Pod and on our website, launchpadpod.com.
So check out our video game content there. This has been like a lot of fun. I really had fun.
I've had a blast.
Thanks to the guys at Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Oh, if you want to hear more about Famous Monsters of Filmland, talking about the Friday the 13th series, and even a little bit about the new Friday the 13th video game, they did it on their first episode of Famous Monsters TV, and you can see that on their YouTube channel at Famous Monsters.
That's right. They talked to the writer and the director of the first film, Sean Cunningham. They did some behind-the-scenes stuff with the new video game. There's a Friday the 13th video game.
The Gun Media. It's an awesome game, by the way, and we are definitely going
to
talk about it.
It's super, super cool. They also got to take a look at the new Sideshow statue, which you and I saw, but it's, I mean,
so cool.
So interesting. So, yeah, check that stuff out with the Famous Monsters of Filmland at their YouTube channel, Famous Monsters. Okay, so to end this episode, I would like all of you right now to picture a serene lake. And picture two idiots, me and Rumi, in a canoe, gliding across the glass-like surface of the lake. And I look over at Rumi, make sure he's okay. He's starting to fall asleep. And I lean my face over the edge, stare at my reflection in the water, and then all of a sudden, that's your cue, you're supposed to do it.
What am I supposed to do?
How do all the movies end?
And super slow-mo.
That's awesome, man. Well, guys, we had so much fun. Check us out at the Launchpad Podcast. We will talk more about the video games.
Yeah, Rocketeers out.